It's time for the World of Aviation on 830 WCCO. And now here is your host, Al Momberg.
Thanks, Sherm. That is Sherm Bowen, the original host of the World of Aviation, which ran on WCCO Channel 4 television for 28 years. It was the longest-running, locally produced TV show in the nation. And it's a show that you've heard me say I grew up watching it, and I absolutely loved it. Another guy that grew up watching the World of Aviation, and Sherm has also been a mentor to over the years, is our guest this hour. His name is Dave Wyman, and Dave is the editor, publisher of the Midwest Flyer magazine. Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Al, and I want to thank Sherm for mentoring both you and I in our careers in aviation. He's been a great inspiration. I'm sure he's listening tonight.
He's one of the most remarkable individuals that I have ever known.
He sure is.
If not the nicest.
Yeah, he is. Very nice.
Yeah. So how did you start Midwest Flyer? Let's get into that first.
You know, my wife said that you're going to ask me that question. Well, you know, Sherm, in addition to World Aviation, he published a magazine called Minnesota Flyer for a long time. And I grew up with that publication, too. And when I got into flying when I was 18 years old and a freshman at the University of Minnesota, I was reading that and seeing what he was doing with that. And we started a magazine first in Wisconsin called Wisconsin Flyer Magazine, and that was in 1978. And in 1980, we realized in Wisconsin that a state had a hard time supporting a statewide aviation magazine. So in 1980, we expanded the format to cover 11 states in the Midwest.
Well, and it's a great publication. I get a lot of aviation magazines, and this is one of my favorite.
Thank you.
One of my favorites. It's well done. It's well written. The columns in it are great. When did you go color with it?
Oh, jeepers! Now you got me. Probably 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean it's a quality magazine. Let's talk about why I asked you to come on the show tonight. There is a Canadian wilderness fly-in that has been going on for how many years now?
It's actually 20 years when I started flying up to Canada. This is going to be our 21st year in 2009. But as far as getting other pilots to go on this trip, about 5 years now.
Well, I've got the new issue in front of me that I just happened to receive in the mail yesterday.
Okay.
Perfect timing. And there's a great photo, and I believe this is from last year. There's a plane that's on final. Looks like he's about ready to do a flare here on the grass strip with a lake in the background. It's just gorgeous. And then just below that is a photo of all the different airplanes that have landed and have already, they're parked. This looks like an exciting trip, but you know, when you start flying out of the country, there are some things that a lot of us don't know anything about, and I'm one of them. So what are the trials and tribulations when you look at flying into Canada?
Well, yeah, it's interesting you brought that up because this has been a deterrent for pilots flying to Canada because they're afraid of the unknown. And this is where I've gone to the time and expense of kind of researching things out every year. In fact, in travel destinations, Al, are one of our most popular articles in the magazine. And a friend of mine that owned a Ben Franklin store in Eagle River, and he also owned a half of a Canadian fishing resort up in northern Manitoba, asked me to start organizing a flyout. And he's a dear friend. He's listening tonight, in fact. And so we started doing that. And Ray is a wannabe pilot. He sold once, but he quit flying. But he traveled with me for many years, up to about 3 years ago. And we went to his lodge and for many years until he sold it. And now we've been going to a place called Miminiski Lodge, and it's up in northern Manitoba, about 196 nautical north of Thunder Bay.
I would have taken your first pronunciation. I don't think we'd have known the difference.
It's Miminiska. I even screwed it up on that one. But anyhow, When I go to Canada, I want to know where I'm going and how best to get there, just like any other pilot going on any other cross country. I want to know how best to cross the border in regards to notifying Flight Service, which is the Federal Aviation Administration or Canada Air Transport. I want to contact air traffic control if I can, if I'm in an area where they can reach me. I want to know where best to clear customs and going to Canada and also on the return flight back. And I want to know where I can top off my tanks on the aircraft with fuel before entering Canada and where I can buy fuel while in Canada. So I want to make sure that all my pilot and aircraft documentation is in order, as well as my U.S. passport, which is now required. And there's also another thing that we need by U.S. Customs standards is a annual aircraft decal. It costs $26, and it just goes to support U.S. Customs activities in regards to general aviation. The other thing, Al, I want to do, I want to make sure that I brief my aircraft operator's handbook thoroughly, especially in regards to weight and balance, aircraft range, and aircraft limitations.
Sure. Now, what kind of plane were you flying?
Well, actually, that airplane you saw in the article landing in Dominica, that's our Cessna 182 Skyline.
Right. Okay.
And I wanted to put somebody else's airplane in the article. I really did. But the young man that took that picture, he only took a picture of our airplane coming in, so I put it in. So
Now, how far is Miminiska Lodge into Canada?
Okay. Now, you know where Grand Marais is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Thunder Bay is 52 nautical miles northeast of Grand Marais, and Miminiska is 196 nautical miles north of Thunder Bay. So in statute miles, it's about 225, 230 miles north of Thunder Bay.
Okay. Now, where did you take off from?
I took off actually from southern Wisconsin, but we had people coming from Illinois, southern Wisconsin, and the eastern, southeastern part of Minnesota, and we all converged up at Grand Marais. So we all took off from different places.
Okay. How long did it take you? Middleton, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to go from Middleton up to Grand Marais? And I understand in the morning that you took off last year, it was real foggy, so you were delayed in getting off.
Yeah, we were. It took about 2.5 hours.
Not bad. Not bad. Now, I understand you had some problems with, we're going to get to that. So you all met up in Grand Marais.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay in Grand Marais? And I suppose you topped off the tanks at that point?
Oh, we did. And that's the reason why we selected Grand Marais rather than Duluth or any other airport. Grand Marais is the furthest municipal airport in northern Minnesota, which is closest to Thunder Bay. And it's better to top off your tanks before you get into Canada because the price of gas is a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to get as close as possible. Also, by chance, I happen to know the airport manager. I didn't know that until I flew in last year. And Rodney Roy. And Rod put on a really nice lunch for us. We arrived between 11 and 12, depending on our aircraft, and he put on a real nice barbecue for us, and we topped off our tanks and headed up to Thunder Bay.
Now, Grand Marais is a non-towered airport?
That's correct.
I bet you the CTAF frequency was just a buzz, and people were having a ball listening to that, I'm sure, the pilots up in that area. How many planes came in within that hour period?
Well, six aircraft
came
in, and then a seventh aircraft joined us up at Miminiska.
Now, after you left Grand Marais, now let me ask you, did you file an IFR flight plan?
I have flown IFR into Canada just past International Falls there or into Thunder Bay. But no, I flew VFR. Most of our pilots are VFR pilots. And, in fact, that's one of the hesitations of pilots going on this trip. They've contacted me, and they say, gee, Dave, I don't have an instrument rating. And I said, well, in Canada, an instrument rating really doesn't do you a lot of good unless you can fly at high altitudes because radar can't pick you up anyhow.
Hmm. Interesting.
And in order to land at Miminiska, you got to be VFR. So I tell them to hone their VFR skills before taking the trip. And
anybody get lost? A lot of lakes up there.
Pretty hard to get lost nowadays with GPS.
Right.
I remember once I was flying up to northern Manitoba, about 400 miles north of International Falls 20 years ago, and there had been a forest fire. And I had, you know, I just had VORs and NDBs. And
right.
In Canada, NDBs are still quite popular, although GPS has taken over. And it was really hard to dead reckon or follow using aeronautical charts only flying up in that tundra area.
Now, did all the planes have GPS?
Yeah, they did.
They did?
Yeah.
This is becoming real prevalent, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, which is a good thing. So you took off from Grand Marais, and you're going pretty much northwest to Duluth?
Northeast.
Northeast, yeah, okay.
Yeah, first we flew northwest
right.
to Duluth and kind of wrapped around. I encourage people not to fly over the lake
yeah.
if they don't have to. If you get up to, you probably know the rule by now, you've been flying long enough, if you get up to 10,000 feet and you're pretty safe as far as reaching a shoreline. But anyhow, we go around Duluth and head up northeast. And
mm-hmm.
once we got 50 miles northeast, now I was instruments up to Grand Marais. I mean, I flew IFR up there, and we broke out just before we got to Duluth. But once you get 50 miles north of Duluth, Minneapolis Center can't pick you up. In fact, you have to cancel your flight plan on the ground. They lose radar coverage about 50 miles, and then just about 10 more miles, you lose radio contact as well.
So what do you do?
Well, when you land at Grand Marais, you got to get on the phone and cancel your IFR flight plan.
And then after that, now, do you have flight following or anything of that nature with the Canadian authorities?
No. Radar coverage is really poor at low altitudes up in Canada, and so when you get up around Thunder Bay. Now, when you take off from Grand Marais, it's not long until you get close to the border, and you need to contact either Princeton Flight Service or Princeton Radio, or you got to contact Minneapolis Center and get a transponder code. Now, what we've done is, because radio communications is so difficult up there, we call Flight Service. Flight Service calls Minneapolis Center and gets a international transponder code for each aircraft. And then we have 1 hour from the time we get that code until we cross the border, until the code is no longer good. And once you cross the border, you squawk 1200 on the radio frequency. They throw one more. This is why I've done the homework on this, to try to get out the wrinkles for all the other pilots. You also need to be talking to either Flight Service or Minneapolis Center or somebody on the ground as you cross the border.
Mm.
And they do that because of international security. They just want to be talking to you all the time. It's pretty tough in that region, however.
Okay, so before you go into Canada, you mentioned you have to change your transponder. And this has apparently been cleared through our system with Canada's system?
Yes, it is. Yes, it has. As you know, Al, a transponder is an instrument on the airplane that emits a radar vibe out there. So air traffic control and U.S. Customs Border Patrol, which is flying overhead in jets and helicopters and everything else at high altitude, they can pick us up and they can track our over the ground, the aircraft flying over the ground. And mm-hmm. normally, when you're flying VFR, you're squawking a code of 1200.
Right.
And for instrument flying, they give you a discrete code.
Right.
And for flying over, crossing the border, they even give you a more discreet code.
Hmm.
And that's what you got to have to cross the border.
Do you ident that so they know that you're coming over? It stands all clear on the radar screen for them?
No, you don't. Hmm. I don't know why. Maybe I don't know why, but no, you don't. And ident is when you push that button and it just, yeah.
It highlights your planes more in a more brilliant fashion on the scope for the through the traffic controllers. Would you call it flight plan with the Canadian authorities before taking off, and what are the rules and regulations on that?
Okay, well, the night before the flight, up to 48 hours in advance, you contact CANPASS, 1-888-CANPASS, is the toll-free number. That's Canadian Customs. And you give them your estimated time of arrival at, well, in our case, Thunder Bay. And so you have to be, and you have to be arrived within plus or minus 15 minutes. So you really got to do your homework and make sure that you're going to arrive there on time. Then you file a flight plan. In our case, I contacted U.S. Flight Service. Flight Service filed a flight plan to Grand Marais. From Grand Marais, I file a flight plan again with Princeton Radio here in the U.S. to fly to Thunder Bay. I don't contact Winnipeg Flight Service. The U.S. Flight Service Station forwards our flight plan on to Winnipeg, and then they're expecting us to arrive at Thunder Bay at a particular time. Now, because it's pretty doggone tough, you can contact CanPass or Canadian Customs, like in our case, after we arrived in Grand Marais, and give them an update, give them a more current estimated time of arrival. But they're real sticklers. You have to contact them no less than 2 hours before your estimated time of arrival. Coming back in the U.S., the U.S. Customs Service requires at least 1 hour advance notice.
Our guest is Dave Wyman. He is the publisher of Midwest Flyer magazine. And we've been talking about an annual trek that Dave and other pilots take up to Canada to Lodge. What's the name of that lodge?
Minimiska.
And, you know, this sounds like a fabulous trip. It really does. The more I'm listening to you, the more it just sounds like it's so much fun.
I'll tell you where. Oh, we were talking about transponder codes crossing.
Yeah. And you and calling the 1-800-888 CAN pass.
That's right.
To get that visitor number. So it's really not a handoff from U.S. authorities to Canadian authorities. It's more of you know, you're assigned this when you file your clearance with them in advance. And then when you cross the border is when you flip your transponder over.
That's right. Unless you're on an instrument flight plan, and then which is easy going into Thunder Bay, then it is a handoff. But surprisingly, the Minneapolis Center won't even have a small aircraft in sight when you pass the border.
Amazing.
It is.
Now, with the GPS, you obviously know when you're crossing the border. If people don't have GPS, they could be using a DME and the like to know where they're at.
That's right. And a GPS makes it so much simpler because you have a moving map, and especially with the Boundary Water Canoe Area up there, there's a minimum descent altitude of 4,000 feet MSL that you can't go below that in order to preserve the enjoyment of the canoeists and campers below you. And so you want to make sure you're at least at that altitude when you're crossing that area.
Now, you had about six planes going up, plus yourself, right, you said?
Yes.
When you took off from Thunder Bay, or was it Grand Marais or Thunder Bay? Thunder Bay you took off from, right?
Well, I took off from Grand Marais.
Yeah, okay, Grand Marais. How much space in between each plane then?
Okay, good question. We like to, in fact, the way we launch the airplanes, Al, is we try to launch the fastest airplanes first so that nobody passes the other aircraft.
Right.
So we do go single file. I like keeping the airplanes 10 miles apart. The closest I think we've gotten was about 5 miles apart once we got closer to the lodge.
Sure. So basically, on a clear day, you've got each other in sight.
You do when you're within 5 miles.
Yeah, which is great. Now, I would think that you were on some sort of frequency, so you keep in touch with each other?
Yeah, we're using a frequency 122.75 aircraft-to-aircraft frequency, and we could converse on that. We could visit with one another, knowing that we aren't going to interfere with any other frequencies out there, like air traffic control at Thunder Bay or Winnipeg Flight Service Station. It's a frequency reserved for pilots to talk to one another, so we were on that frequency. And about every 50 miles during our flight, I would ask for a roll call and find out and note the position of each of the aircraft. And it was kind of an extra insurance policy besides our flight plan, which is required in Canada. And, you know, by the way, it's not required in the U.S., but
right.
It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But in Canada, you either have to file a flight plan when you're 25 miles from your departure airport.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, it was Thunder Bay. Or you have to contact your destination airport and give them your estimated time of arrival so that if you don't arrive on time, they can contact authorities and they can pursue search and rescue.
Now, a quick question. With GPS, if you're out flying and you have a little bit of problem, you can just push the nearest button on your GPS, and it'll show you, it'll give you a list of airports, starting with the closest one. Flying up into this area of Canada, how many airports were available if an emergency arose?
Well, we noted on our chart, on a chart, as you know, Al, you draw a line from point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
and then we would note there was about a half a dozen airports along that route of flight. Now, most of the airports weren't real close to that route. In fact, the closest one was Armstrong, which was 80 miles south of Mid-Mineska, and we flew right over Armstrong, and that's a beautiful airline type transport airport. So if we ran into any problems, that would be, the best airport to go to. But there would be airports, let's say 25, 50 miles either side of our course line that we could fly to if we needed to divert weather or if we had an emergency situation.
What altitude were you flying when you crossed the border?
Oh boy, stayed pretty low actually. Probably we're heading northeast, so I was probably at 5,500 feet.
Okay, not bad.
And that's above sea level, so approximately 4,500 feet above the ground.
Yeah. You've got a lot of forest, a lot of woods up there. As you're flying along, all pilots do this. You keep an eye open for places to put down if you need to. How is the availability of those areas when you're flying over the forests of Canada?
Well, when you're flying over the tundra of Canada, which that area is, you have lake, you have rock, you have trees, and you have a lot of marsh. And your options are limited. If you land in water, there's a good chance, that's the most open place and most logical place you would want to land, thinking that that is. If you land in water, your chances with a high-wing aircraft are pretty good that you're going to flip over. And that's not a good thing.
No.
And if you land in a bog, and you can, as you know, you can stall an airplane, stall the wings out, and enter and touch down at a very slow speed, which minimizes damage and injury and everything else, you would go, if you landed in a bog, the same thing would happen. So actually what you look for in an emergency landing like that, unfortunately, I've never had to do it. But you always prepare for it.
Yeah,
and you do look for, actually, logging, there's a lot of logging roads up that way. And so my number one choice would be to go for a logging road. Number two would go for level trees. But as you know, the chances of the engine quitting are very, very slim in a general aviation aircraft.
Right. But it's just, it's always, everybody does it. Always a very good idea to prepare for any type of scenario.
That's right.
The runway itself, it's obviously a grass strip. What is the length of the strip at the destination?
At Mid-Mineska, the strip is 2,400 feet. They land a cabin class turboprop or prop jet commuter aircraft up there, which is called the Pilatus, and it's a beautiful aircraft, and so it lands in there. Most of the aircraft are able to stop in half of the distance of the runway, and up in Canada, most of the runways up there are made out of shale or gravel, and the owner of the airport or the government tries to keep that shale compacted really hard to avoid any prop damage and rocks coming up into the propellers of the airplanes. But I tell you, there's two lodges I've been at that have grass airstrips, and Mid-Mineska is one of them, and I'll take a grass strip over a gravel strip anytime.
Well, I think I'd be concerned about, for example, doing a run-up, blowing gravel all over the place, or shale, or whatever it is.
Well, most of those airports have run-up pads.
Okay.
So there's a concrete run-up pad.
Okay.
In the case of one lodge that I used to go to up in northern Manitoba, they did not have a run-up pad, and so the procedure was, and this is a bush pilot procedure, you actually kind of you keep moving all the time, and so you do your check as you're moving, and you're keeping, you're not sucking up that gravel.
Yeah.
And I learned that the hard way.
So how do people, if they want to get on this trip next year, how do they get in touch with you to sign up?
Okay. Well, you know, interesting, Al, is that this year we're going to open up the trip to pilots as well as non-pilots.
Hmm.
If they would like to contact me, they can via email at dave@midwestflyer.com. So D-A-V-E at midwestflyer.com. And I'll send them a trip information about the trip. They can also call Miminiska Lodge directly. In fact, non-pilots should contact Miminiska and tell them they want to join our group, and their toll-free number is 1-888-465-FISH or 3474. So 1-888-465-FISH.
That's easy to remember. We are speaking with Dave Wyman, the publisher of the Midwest Flyer. And, Dave, you have other publications as well?
I did. We published another publication for the airshow entertainment industry. We sold that almost 4 years ago now, and actually two publications for the airshow entertainment industry. And we started with Wisconsin Flyer, as I noted, and that turned into Midwest Flyer magazine.
Now, the excursion next year, August 19th to the 23rd, you mentioned it's open to both pilots and non-pilots. Now, we know how the pilots are going to get there. They're going to fly in. Non-pilots, do they tag along with the other pilots, or do they get there some other way?
Okay, there's two ways for a non-pilot to go on the trip. They can contact me via email, again, at dave@midwestflyer.com, and I will do my best to hook them up with a pilot, and they can help share expenses going up to the lodge and defray those, like gas expenses and
sure.
whatever. The other way is to drive to Thunder Bay, and the people at Wilderness North, which is the corporation that owns Miminiska Lodge and four other lodges up in Canada, they'll arrange for a shuttle flight between Thunder Bay and Miminiska Lodge. And so they can actually fly in just like the rest of us.
Out of curiosity, it's right there on a lake. If somebody has a float plane, can they fly in with a float plane?
They certainly can. Yep, there's they have a seaplane base there. In fact, there's a 1957 de Havilland Otter that's based at Miminiska, and it's on straight floats, and I'm looking forward to flying that next summer.
I had the pleasure of going up in a 1950s de Havilland Beaver up in Alaska, and it was wonderful. What a great airplane.
It is great.
It is really
the Beaver's
cool.
A workhorse. The Otter's a workhorse up in Canada. And also the Cessna Caravan is a great float plane.
Now, when people contact you, you have a trip planning guide, I understand.
Right, and this takes all the bumps out of the trip for pilots. It answers a lot of their questions. A lot of things that we're going over right now includes information on the lodge and Lake Miminiska, but especially on how to plan a flight to Canada, including equipment requirements, permits required, where to land for fuel, flight procedures, emergency procedures like we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
first aid and survival information, as well as information on special arrangements that are being made just for our group.
Now, going into Canada, do you, flying in a private airplane, do you need a passport?
Yes, you do.
And where is that checked?
Now, Canadian Customs, It's different than the U.S. You know, that's the thing. Things operate a little bit differently. When you clear customs at Thunder Bay, what it is a customs official could come out and inspect your aircraft. But generally speaking, you land there, you have to, the pilot in command, if a customs official does not come out, the pilot in command can get out of the airplane and go in and make a phone call to CANPASS, and they get you get a visitor's number for the period of time that you're up there. You tell them how many people are on board. In fact, you do this even before entering Canadian airspace. and they ask you if you have any alcohol or tobacco products or anything of that sort, and they give you a number, and then you're good for the week or 2 weeks, whatever period of time that you're up there. Now, coming back, the U.S. Customs always meet you at your aircraft, and you cannot get out of your aircraft until that customs official comes up to your aircraft. So it works a little bit differently.
Sure. We've got about a minute left. Tell us about Minnemiska Lodge.
Well, it's a very modern, but very rustic lodge. There's log cabins. There's also cedar-sided cabins. They have all the conveniences. Food is provided for you up there and served to you. You have the notorious shore lunch, which is just fabulous. Every day at noon, you break and you eat some of your catch of walleye or northern at a shore lunch, and
nice.
You can either prepare it yourself or they'll provide the staff to come out and prepare it on an open fire. It's a great place. They have this is a lot different than the first years that I was going up there. They got satellite TV now.
Nice.
Yeah. But interesting, none of us even turned it on this year at all. Last year we did, but this year we did not because, hey, you're out in the great wilderness and who needs all the conveniences?
Well, yeah, unless you want to watch the Twins.
There you go.
Yeah. Dave, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and it was great to see you at the MATA conference. It was a real pleasure, and you and I, we just don't talk as much as we really should. But I appreciate you coming on the show. And again, the website is MidwestFlyer.com. You can contact Dave directly at Dave@MidwestFlyer.com. And sign up for this trip next August 19th to the 23rd up into Canada. Do some fishing and flying and have a ball. Dave, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Al, and thank you for hosting the World of Aviation.